evening and welcome to episode 62 of the Deck Tees podcast, brought to you by LegitMTG.com. My name is Aaron Campbell, and my guest tonight is a man of many talents. He is a level 3 judge. He is a Northwest regional coordinator for the judges program. He is the creator of the JudgeCast podcast. He is a commentator for Star City Games, and he is the very definition of a silver fox. Hello, Ricky Hayashi.
I don't even know what that last part meant. Hello, by the way.
You don't know what a silver fox is?
No. Actually, I don't.
Would you like me to tell
you?
You
like a silverback gorilla? You saying, I guess I'm the leader of the pack?
No, a silver fox is a term of endearment for a handsome man who happens to have either gray or silver hair. So do you know Anderson Cooper from CNN?
Yes.
He's a silver fox.
Okay. He's much more silver, though.
But you do have silver going on, and you're an attractive man. So for all intents and purposes, you're a silver fox.
Yes, I have sprinkles. I actually, one time at a tournament, my fiance Tasha, she was my girlfriend at the time, was talking with a woman, a player, and they were chatting about, you know, magic women things. Like the fact that there aren't that many women, et cetera. Does your boyfriend play, et cetera? And she's like, yeah, my boyfriend is actually also a judge. You know, you may have seen him out there. He's Asian and has still some sprinkles of gray in his hair. And the other woman apparently made a comment like, oh, you mean the Asian George Clooney? Yes. Yes, I am. So I wasn't a part of the conversation, but she told me about that, and that fits for everything I do.
Have you referred to yourself as that or been referred to as that since then?
All the time.
All the time.
Well, here's the thing. If you're familiar with the movie Up in the Air that George Clooney was in.
That was a good movie, yeah.
Yeah, it was a great movie. And this is actually my life. I am up in the air all the time. So I get compared to him more in that regard by other people, by judges. But, you know, I have this gray sprinkles too. So I like to think that I'm good looking. So I'll take it.
I actually don't like that Clooney. Like, my favorite version of Clooney was, did you ever see From Dusk Till Dawn?
Oh, are you kidding me?
Oh, I love badass, dirty Clooney with the tattoos and the cursing and the, oh, that's how I like my Clooney. I like him naughty.
I guess that I have more negative impressions of the movie overall.
Oh, than his character. I love that movie.
It was just too violent, too explicit.
Oh. You do know you're on my show, right? Like, explicit's my name. Like,
is everything okay? We're having it's got an internet connectivity issue update.
Yeah, as far as I can see, everything's fine.
Okay.
So, so I like my Clooney a little dirty, a little rough around the edges, and I don't know, I don't really get in a shiny, happy Clooney. I need a little edge.
Well, we'll see what kind of Clooney I get tonight. We're going to go see Gravity later on.
Oh, yeah, I thought you were going to see it before this.
No. We have a 7:30 show.
Okay, well, I will certainly try not to keep you from the Gravity then. So let's go ahead and
astronaut Clooney falling to the earth. I'm not going to see much of his hair in this, I imagine.
You never know, you might, though. I did hear some criticisms about Sandra Bullock's hair, though. I won't spoil it for you, but that actually did come up in conversation quite a bit when people were referring to the movie afterwards.
Huh.
Yeah. Well,
I'm just going to guess maybe it's too long for being an astronaut that it would get in the way.
I'm not going to ruin it for you, but I'll let you come to me afterwards and tell me what you thought of it. So
sure, yeah.
So let's get started.
When it comes to the hairstyles, when I was younger, I studied the whole phenomenon. And study is kind of a.
Were you? Did you want to be a hairstylist at one point, or?
No. I'm talking about like in media.
Okay.
The whole. Do you remember the phenomenon with Felicity?
Yes.
And Carrie Russell. Mm-hmm. That was very interesting to me. And I noticed that this season, I don't know the actress's name, but the Mindy Project, she got a haircut. And I'm wondering if there's going to be kind of a Felicity effect with the show.
I don't
And
know.
for the listeners, if you don't know, Felicity was one of the WB teen shows, along with Dawson's Creek and Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And after the first season, it was very popular in the first season. And then going into the second season, the actress Carrie Russell got a haircut, and she's got very like curly hair, and so she had a very curly short cut. And really, that haircut killed the series.
Yeah.
It's such a strange reaction to that.
So let's go ahead and get started. So you were actually
Okay.
doing some commentating at SCG Milwaukee this past weekend. Did you have a good time at the event?
I did. It was a lot of fun. Milwaukee. So, Green Bay is actually kind of, if you go way, way, way back, my hometown, if you will, or first town. It was the first place where my family, we moved from Japan, the first place we lived in the United States. Now,
I didn't
this
know
is
that.
why, despite the fact that I mostly spent most of my life in California, now live in Portland, I still profess loyalty to the Green Bay Packers.
Oh,
So
awesome.
it was a bit of a homecoming for me, even though I don't really remember living in Green Bay as very, very young. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I enjoy interacting with all the Packers fans. There were several people in jerseys, and we won, so it was great.
So when you go to a city and you're commentating, Ricky, how much time do you actually get to spend in terms of like, do you get to go out and see the cities at all, or are you very much in the booth and then back to your hotel or wherever and then back again?
Well, let's see. How far was it from the airport to the hotel? Because that's about how much time I spent on. Very rarely do I get to go out into the city. It's nice if I do. There was an event in Kansas City where we had to book our flight back was very late in the afternoon, like 5 or 6 p.m. So an associate of mine, Bruce Mills, and I went out to an aquarium, in fact, in downtown Kansas City. There was also a Legoland next door, but we didn't have enough time to do both. So next time, go back to the Legoland, perhaps in Kansas City.
It's actually funny. I've never been to a Legoland before. I was never good at Legos. Like, I always wanted to. I was always that kid where my mom would always buy me the really complex looking like castles and things like that, and I would get really frustrated that I could never make the blocks that they gave me look like that. It used to make me really sad as a child.
The weird thing is, it wasn't, when I say Legoland, it wasn't like a theme park. It was all indoors.
Oh, I
So we
know.
didn't, so we don't know what it was like, but it was a indoor Lego cave, I suppose.
If it's what I'm thinking of, I think it might be a store where like you can just get all sorts of Lego blocks there and like you can even buy them individual pieces. Like I think that's what it is.
Yeah, certainly there was a store. It was actually, so you go in through the front door, and it's like if you turn left, it was the aquarium, and if you go right, it was the Lego part. And then they meet again at the end at the store. So we actually walked through the Lego store. But I guess there were exhibits in there, like people making some impressive things with Legos, like a Lego city.
Yeah, that would make me really envious because, like I said, I have no artistic ability. So I would just sort of look at that and feel very sad. Like, why can't I do that? And then I'd feel bad about myself, and it would be this whole shame spiral.
Yeah, I had a lot of Legos when I was a kid, but I always stuck to the script. I just built whatever the directions said to build, and I didn't really try anything different with them. So if I had it all to do over again, if I could go back to being a kid, I would try to do stuff with Legos, make my own thing.
Well, I was at SCG Milwaukee as well, because Milwaukee's my hometown, and I did not do so hot. I went 2-4, and then I dropped. And I don't know if you're aware of this, but I have some tilting issues, and I was a really good
Oh.
girl. What was that?
Well, are we going to talk about that?
Of course we are. This is me. I
Okay.
have to.
Good.
So I was a really good girl. I didn't tilt this weekend. But the problem is, and I've sort of put myself on this mission of trying to understand my tilt and try to like understand the nuances of it. And I was a really good girl. I didn't tilt. I kept all my tilt inside, and I found that when I didn't lash out at people and I didn't purge myself of all those ugly feelings, that I felt worse. Like I was just sort of stewing in
Oh.
it. And I got really, really sad, and I almost cried after my sixth round match because I was so upset. But she was really nice, and I was trying really hard not to tilt and do the right thing. But by doing the right thing for other people, I felt like I made myself feel worse. So there was a good hour after the event where I felt like just utter crap. And I had to just sit there and deal with all those really ugly feelings. And it was something I wasn't expecting. And it really kind of soured my night a little bit.
Well, that's unfortunate. What exactly was it? Was it the way you lost, or just losing in general?
I think it was the losing in general, and then what I lost to. Like, my deck was really strong against mid-range. It was really strong against control. I was just losing to these really, really fast aggro decks that I thought were really, as the WoW players say, face roll. And I just felt like, you know, when you're playing a deck that's, you know, 75% creatures, and you're using all of your removal to kill those creatures, and they still keep coming up with more creatures, it just feels very hopeless. And you're just like, what am I going to do? Like, you're always going to have creatures. This is just never going to end. And I was very disappointed at that. So that was a little troublesome for me. One of my opponents was hungover, and that was a little annoying. Like, he was playing this really complicated Bant mid-range deck. He forgot like half of his triggers, and then he'd be like, I shouldn't have been drinking the night before. I'm sorry. And I'm just like, what are you doing? Like, if you're going to be hungover, play something like Red Deck Wins. You know, don't play something where you have to like keep track of stuff. And that was a little annoying for me, because I lost to that. I lost to hungover guy. And that kind
I can understand that.
That kind of hurt my ego a little bit. And, you know, just, it was a lot of things. It was ego. It was disappointment. It was shame. It was pride. It was all those things I just had to sit on, because I couldn't let them out at people. And it was a little harsh. So, but
yeah. I played in states the week before, you know, one of the many states, and I went 4-3, which is just fine for me. I love it when I can win more matches than I lose. But more importantly, I had a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun playing against people, interacting with people, and I think one of the reasons for this is that nowadays, obviously, with everything else I do, I have so few chances to play. The most Magic I get to play is on Magic Online, and the people on there are just atrocious. Mm. It's a Mos Eisley on Magic Online. So getting to interact with real people and being able to look them in the eye and just, you know, smile and enjoy Magic and not have people say, you know, quite frankly, very insulting things to you, is a relief for me.
Yeah, those are things I enjoy about Magic too. Like I said, I've been really trying to beat this tilt thing, and with every situation I encounter it, I feel like I get to know it a little better, and then, you know, I feel like my tilt is something very tangible and very real, and I would like to think that one day I will understand it so well that I will have beat it. And it's gotten a lot better since rotation happened. Like, I took a good month off from the game and didn't really play very much. And I'm trying really hard to be good. I just had never, like I said, I've always taken comfort in the fact that, you know, you can sort of get rid of all those ugly feelings by spewing them at people. And I know that's not the right thing to do. I'm not saying that it is, but that's how I would feel better. And when I did the right thing, which was, I didn't do that at all. I didn't offend anybody. I didn't yell at anybody. I didn't snap at anybody. You know, by keeping it all inside, I just had to let it fester. And now that I know how to deal with it, when I do that, I feel a little bit better for it.
Yeah, I mean, festering really is the right term for it. I don't know. My suggestion would be to talk to your opponent some more and get to know them better. And that way, you know, even when you do lose, you form this bond and camaraderie with your opponent, and maybe you can take some more joy and happiness in the fact that even though you lost, they won, right? So there was a winner there, and just more enjoyment in the match itself and playing Magic, mm-hmm. rather than getting too caught up in just the result of winning or losing.
That's a really good way to look at it. That's something I haven't really thought of before, was you know, establishing that connection and building on it. I didn't think of that. So, one thing about SCG Milwaukee that really caught my eye was, I was watching the stream, and one of the opponents on the stream, or one of the players, took out his camera and took a picture of the opponent's hand. I got to admit, I didn't know what was happening.
Yeah. I remember that. I commented on it, and, yeah, you know, technical rules, maybe that's not allowed, but part of the thing is the technical rules have not caught up with the technology in all cases. So Yeah, we allow players to take pictures of the standings. You can't consult it during the match, but you can certainly, use it to decide if, you want to intentionally draw or concede to your opponent or whatever. So I was okay with it. It was a very interesting situation, but it seems like the funny part was he actually messed up a couple of turns later. Completely didn't play around something that his opponent had in his hand when he took the picture. So I think it might have actually cost him. He took the picture with the expectation that I can just consult it at any time and know what's in my opponent's hand. So he didn't really look at his opponent's hand and kind of take a measured response of it, mm-hmm. right? So then he forgot what was there and didn't play around something.
Right. So if anybody's listening to this, is that something that's allowed? Like if you play a card like Thoughtseize, can anybody just take a picture of it and that's okay? Like there's no punishments for that or anything like that?
Yeah. Again, I think it seems fine. The policy in terms of electronic devices is dependent on the TO and or the head judge to decide things. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, how much access you want to grant people to their devices. And this is something that as a community, we're going to need to figure out as we go on. Because originally when the policy was written, there was no inkling that you could, go and read an article on Star City or Channel Fireball from your phone, right? So we've had to evolve our understanding of technology and how it can and or should be used in the game of Magic. And I think taking a photo is fine. I mean, it's the same thing as writing it down, writing all the card names down. You do have access to the specific text on the cards, but that's something if you ask a passing judge for, you can ask them for the text on a card. So ultimately, there's nothing there in the photo that you could not get through the means. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, it saves time. So I'm kind of all for it.
Right. Another thing I've seen people do, I don't know if this is allowed or not, but I know at my local F&Ms, I've seen people where if you play a card like Thoughtseize, the opponent will lay down their hand as of when the Thoughtseize was played, and they will keep it face up. And then they'll just draw and they'll play, but then they'll hide those cards, but they'll leave everything else on the table as it were. Is that allowed?
Sure, that's allowed. Okay. You're free to give your opponent whatever information you want. So technically you are allowed to play with your hand face up.
Okay.
Or, Indian poker style, I believe it is.
Okay.
Just show them what cards you have. And again, this is just a time-saving thing that people do at more the casual level is, okay, that these cards are in my hand, so you can look at them at any time you want and know that those are it.
Mm-hmm. Is that something that would fly in the tournament scene at all or no?
I think, it's weird because I don't know if you're familiar with the Levine Trench.
No.
It is a term coined by level 3 judge from Massachusetts, Eric Levine, and he drew like a bell curve, and the two axes are kind of the skill level of the player or their perceived skill level of themselves, mm-hmm. and how much of a dick they are. So when you get the super, casual players who just play Commander or whatever, they're very nice, right? They don't care, there's nothing on the line, they just want to play Magic. As you move along the curve, you get into GPT, especially like the Levine Trench, it actually goes down because it's a trench. It bottoms out kind of at the PTQ, I guess now SCG Open grinder level, mm-hmm. are the most dickish players. They are the rules lawyers. They're the ones that try to hold you to everything.
Yep.
And then when you move past that, when you get to the Pro Tour level, especially people who are on the Pro Tour gravy train, Hall of Famers, then once again, they start to get nice again and they're more casual about things because they have, I think, so much experience and so much confidence in their own abilities that they don't need to seek out those rules lawyery edges. Mm-hmm. They just want to outplay you, with the actual play.
Right.
So I think I have seen, I can't remember if it was a Grand Prix or a Pro Tour, in a feature match area, two pros who know each other very well, they'll just do that. If you see my hand through some kind of discard effect, I'll leave them face up for you because, you know about them. You were going to write them down anyway. Let's just save time and play our match.
It's a good way to look at it. So let's talk more about judging. So currently right now, Ricky, your title, you are the Northwest Regional Coordinator for the United States. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. What exactly does that mean? Like, what do you do?
So the analogy I use is that I am a grand moth. For those of you kids out there, there were three Star Wars films before these new ones with Jar Jar Binks. The Grand Moffs are the regional governors in the Empire. You know, the most famous one was Grand Moff Tarkin, who was on Death Star. So that's how I, shorthand describe it to people, is that I am kind of, my region, the Northwest, includes the states of Alaska, Hawaii, Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Montana, Utah, Wyoming, and Colorado, and also Guam, because there's like one judge in Guam, and he had to go somewhere.
There's only one judge in all of Guam.
I believe so. Neil Pendon, and he just made level two, so he's now working very hard. By the end of the year, I expect there to be some more. There will actually be a community out there, which is fantastic.
I was going to say, what happens if somebody wants to appeal him?
Well, each individual tournament, you can only appeal to the head judge. So.
Well, it's different if the head judge is the only judge in the country.
Oh, yeah. You could still have floor judges, uncertified level zeros.
Okay.
Which I don't know if the tournaments out there are big enough to warrant that.
True.
But in terms of, like, the structure of the tournament is always quite independent from the structure of, the judge program as a whole. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if I were to ever get a phone call from somebody and the person on the other line says, "Hey, Ricky, like, this judge is making a terrible ruling. Will you please correct him?" The first thing I'd do is say, "Okay, put the judge on the phone." And I would say to the judge, "Well, I might ask about the ruling just to make sure it's correct for my own edification. But the next thing I'd say is give this player an unsporting conduct penalty, because, the judge on the scene, and especially the head judge, is the final authority of the tournament. You can't just go call in whatever famous judge, mm-hmm. just because you happen to have a phone number to try to go over their heads. It's very important to maintain the chain of command at the event."
Have people actually tried to do that? Like, people who know you, they've had, that's something that's happened to you?
No.
Oh.
Because I rarely give out my phone number. And then even if they do have my number, I don't answer my phone.
Okay.
But I have heard of it happening.
Really? Wow.
Yes.
Yeah, see, I wouldn't think to do that. Like, I wouldn't have the audacity to assume that I had that sort of, I totally know him. Like, ugh.
It takes a certain amount of audacity, that's for sure.
Hmm.
So anyway, outside of the tournament structure, the judges, even though our work is primarily at tournaments, we have to have kind of an organizational structure to be able to communicate things and get things done, like staffing events what happen and all that. So that's where the regional coordinators come in. Basically, like I said, I'm the moth or the governor of. We just saw, we're catching up on Walking Dead season 3, so saying governor just kind of. So there's all of these characters I'm referring to are terrible, terrible people.
It's interesting that we have different word associations with words. Like, you said governor and you thought of Walking Dead. I hear governor and I think of the new Britney Spears song, "Go Call the Governor."
Oh, see, I do not like Britney Spears music.
Ricky Hayashi.
Is this interview over?
No, totally not. But I will just pretend I didn't hear that. Okay. Go on.
I mean, the second thing I would associate with governor would be Arnold Schwarzenegger, formerly from California.
Very true.
So I don't even know who the governor board is right now. I need to catch up on some local politics.
Okay, so back to you as the governor. What is going back to what you do as the coordinator?
Okay, yeah. So one of the primary, like, day to day or week to week responsibilities of regional coordinators is to help staff Grand Prix events. Mm-hmm. because these are events that require anywhere from like usually 30 to 60 judges. You know, there are outliers, like Grand Prix Las Vegas was over 100, maybe like 150 judges. But most Grand Prix, more judges will apply than they need on staff. And at that point, you know, you have to make decisions. The tournament organizer or the judge manager for the event is going to need to make some very difficult decisions about who to accept and who to decline for this event. So let's say there's a Grand Prix in Louisville, right? That's coming up this weekend.
Sure.
And some judges from the Northwest apply, you know, Seattle or Denver, Colorado. The TO or the judge manager for a GP in Louisville is not really going to know these people, know their skill set, you know, whether they're appropriate floor judges for a Grand Prix level event. So the regional coordinators then offer feedback and say, yes, you know, this person is this good with the rules, et cetera, and also kind of prioritize people from the region so that we can balance opportunities. You know, I keep track of what judges go to what GPs. So I can say, well, this person has gone to, you know, three GPs in the last 2 months. So maybe this is a good time for them to not get out of an event, because we want to make sure that everyone has equal opportunities and gets a chance to work a GP, because it's a fantastic experience. So that's kind of, like I said, the week to week thing. A lot of the rest of it, you know, there are Star City events, PTQs that I might participate in, trying to help staff. Especially for me in the Northwest, it's states like Montana and Idaho, Wyoming don't have too many judges, and especially don't have too many level two judges, which is really the competitive rules enforcement level judge that you would need for PTQs. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if a new store is running their first PTQ, they might not know where to get a judge. You know, maybe their in-store judge is just a level one. So that's where I come in. They can contact me and say, can you give us some help contacting some judges, finding some people for this event? Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of an information or communication conduit,
right,
between various resources.
Is there anything you can do about those states where, like you said, there were certain states that just don't have that many judges, or they don't have that many high-level judges? Is there anything that you can do to sort of change that? Like, is there anything in the judging program to – maybe this is a bad metaphor, but, you know, when I think of, like, the military and they're low on soldiers, they go through, like, recruitment phases where they try to entice people to want to join and things like that. Is there anything that you guys can do to see if people are interested in being a judge or trying to, you know, inspire people to try that out, to fill those ranks?
Yeah, I think inspire is absolutely the correct word to use there. In terms of getting, you know, finding judges, there's one thing you need, which is the information. You need to be good enough with the rules and policy of tournaments to be able to judge a tournament. But the other thing is inspiration, getting a player who has that knowledge to decide that they want to become a judge for whatever reason, and then helping them find the appropriate resources or contacting the correct people to make that happen. And one of the big ways we do that is with judge conferences. In Montana, we just had one 2 months ago now, I guess. And before the judge conference, there were 5 judges total in the state of Montana.
Jesus.
Maybe 6. 5 or 6. All of them level ones.
Wow.
And I, as the regional coordinator, we get to allocate 2 judge conferences every year per each of our regions. Mm-hmm. And we had one of them earlier in the year in Portland after the Grand Prix. And the second one I targeted for Montana because I really wanted to use it as you said, a recruitment drive, mm-hmm, to get people who are interested in judging somewhere to learn more skills and give them an opportunity to take a test, because you have to be a level two to be able to give a test. So internally, the state of Montana had no way to generate more judges. They would have to import a level two from somewhere else. So we went in there, myself, Tasha, my fiance, we're both level three judges. Jeremy Bahunin, who's my state coordinator for Utah, he's a level three. He came up. and several level twos from Idaho and Wyoming and even Colorado. Actually, also California. Jess Dunks, he's a level two from California. He's actually the like the event manager for Channel Fireball.
He's also cute.
He's from Montana, as it turns out. So he was visiting family, and he saw the judge conference poster and said, "Hey, Ricky, like, I'm going to be visiting family. Do you want me to come out?" I was like, "Absolutely." Use all the help we can get, and it was a fantastic event. We, you know, got a lot of people in there, and we left the state of Montana with 16 level ones when all was said and done.
Wow.
I'm sorry, 16 total judges and a new level two, Montana's first level two, Jonathan Mortensen.
Cool.
Yeah. So it was really successful. So that's one of the things, the judge conference used as a recruitment and education tool to answer your question. Mm-hmm.
So let's go back to when you first became a judge. So what made you decide, Ricky, that you even wanted to be a judge?
Well, this is a story I've told quite often, but I'm happy to repeat it.
I've never heard it before.
I got a terrible ruling and a PTQ. this is one of the ways that people become judges.
Really?
You get a ruling, and you're like, really? Like, I'm going to appeal that because you're wrong. And then you appeal, and the head judge corrects the floor judge, and you leave with this sense of, I could be a better judge than that person. And this is, you know, some other people said similar stories to this. But for me, that's just kind of my personality. It was, okay, so this was Onslaught Block Constructed.
Oh, wow.
I'm sorry, Onslaught Block Sealed. And there's a PTQ. I had a deck with three Wirewood Savages, which is a green and two, 2/2 elf. Whenever a beast enters the battlefield, draw a card. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what I cast this elf, and then I cast a beast. And then my opponent had something that changed the creature type of a card. Because Onslaught was a tribal block, so there's a lot of creature type synergies. And he asked the judge, if I change the creature type of the beast, does he still draw a card? And the judge says, no. And I was like, That's not correct at all. The trigger is already triggered. It's happened. You can't stop it, even if you change the type. So I appealed. It was overturned. I got to draw my card, and then I became a judge. The second half of the why I became a judge is because I was bad at playing Magic. Right? This is another thing you hear. It took a few months until Darksteel. I guess that's almost 2 years. Darksteel, I was at Grand Prix Oakland. This is a limited Grand Prix, my first Grand Prix ever attending in any fashion. And I was very excited. I thought I would do well. Didn't. And didn't make day two. And had nothing really to do on day two. You know, I could have played in the PTQ. I could have played in some drafts. But this idea of becoming a judge had been bouncing around in my head for a while. There was that the misruling, and just in my local store, I was the rules guy that mm-hmm. people would always ask questions. So I was I was the judge in function, but not in official title. And that's something you also see a lot too. People will say, "Well, I'm already doing all the things. I might as well become a certified judge."
Sure.
And so all of that kind of came together. I showed up on day two, and I said, Toby, this is Toby Elliott. He's now a level 5 judge. At the time, he was a level 3 out in Palo Alto. I said, Toby, I'm finally ready. I want to become a judge. So that's how it happened.
Interesting. And when you started getting into it, I'm sorry.
I was going to say he regrets it every
I'm sure that's not the case.
No, but he likes to joke about it because we have that kind of relationship.
Which I think is a healthy relationship, so I see nothing wrong with that.
I love taking that. I'll take it all the time.
But what I was going to ask you was, when you started off on this journey, did you have any idea that you were going to be as involved with it as you were? Like, did you go into it thinking, I'll just get a title, I'll be a judge, maybe a level 1, or did you go into it going, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this all the way?
No, not at all at the time. It was just a thing to do. It's really weird because at the time I played a lot more constructed than limited. I felt like I was kind of a constructed specialist. So it was a way for me to spend limited PTQ seasons as well. Rather than playing a PTQ that I wasn't really excited about, I could go and judge. That's another, in the Bay Area, Toby Elliott and the other level three judge at the time, Don Barkoskis, had this type of symbiotic relationship where Toby would play in the limited PTQs and then Don would be the head judge, and then the constructed season, they would flip-flop. Mm-hmm. But at the time, no, it's just a... It was just a way to, you know, fill my time or help people out in the local store. It wasn't until I judged my first Grand Prix. So even though I helped out a little on day two of GP Oakland, I didn't start off on staff. So I was just, you know, helping out with side drafts or whatever. It wasn't until, I guess, 3 years later, 2007, that Grand Prix San Jose, I think in the official coverage, it's called Grand Prix San Francisco, but it was really in San Jose, which is about 45 minutes away, mm-hmm. because they love naming them not where they are. but this came to town, and at that point, I was becoming more serious about judging. Mm-hmm. And so I applied to judge that event, and it really completely changed my perspective on things. And I met some fantastic people, John Carter, Seamus Campbell, Adam Shaw. Some of them I had maybe met previously. Carter I had certainly met previously. He used to be the rules manager, level four judge, and he wrote the Saturday School article, which was a great inspiration for me as a judge and as a writer. So I had met Carter previously, but Seamus and Adam, these were the first times I'd met them, and just the amount of time that they spent helping me out and giving me advice was just an eye-opening experience for me, and it really wanted me to continue doing more. So that was the jumping off point of the what I guess I would call the modern era of my judging, and I really wanted to do it as a consistent thing. Mm-hmm.
So how far do you intend to take this? Because you're a level three right now, and you've already got your fingers in a lot of pies. And I know from having previous judges on my show that there aren't very many fours, and there are even less fives in the world. Do you have an end game, or are you happy being a three? Or
do I have an end game? No. So here, the thing is, it's really weird. You're not supposed to say that you want to be these higher levels.
Really?
What happens in the program is they say when the program has a need, when the judge program has a need for someone to be a level four or a level five, and you fit that need, then you're going to get promoted. So I completely buck that trend, and since you know GP San Jose, or maybe a little bit after that, I have always said that I wanted to be a level five judge, mm-hmm. because I just have this kind of personality where I want to pursue something to its final end, mm-hmm. I guess. And I've gone through phases where some things maybe have gotten me down. I said, no, level three is fine. I don't want to go any higher now. But nowadays, you know, being a regional coordinator, I'm very, very much involved in things. I feel like it's getting close to the time where that there may be a need, mm-hmm. for me to step up and be a level four. And I would be okay with that. I think I could do a lot of good in various ways. I think I bring a lot to the table in that regard. But again, it's not something that you can personally decide, mm-hmm. and pursue. It's really up to the power to be when it happens. So I will just continue to do work. And if they ask me to do it, at this point, I'd most likely say yes.
Mm-hmm. It's a very noble attitude to have. You know, I can see it being very easy for you to you know, maybe be a little more driven about it and not necessarily in a good way. And I think your attitude and your approach is very, you're very focused on the player, which I like. You know, yeah, you could be like, I really want this me. But like you said, it's about whether or not the need is there, whether or not, you know, you're doing it because they need a judge, not because it's another title to have or another rank to obtain, you know?
Well, yeah, like I said, I've definitely gone through those phases of me. And I've suffered a lot of backlash for it.
Really?
Various people, yeah. Is that surprising?
I guess so. Like I don't see what's wrong with having a little ambition. You know, like I think you can only be selfless to a point, and I wouldn't think there's anything wrong with, you know, yeah. If I would think, like you said, if you're going to do this, go all the way. Like, why would you not want that? And it's strange to me that that would be something people would maybe turn on you for. Like, I don't know why that would be.
Yeah, you know, there's just this sense in the entire judge program that we don't want people to get too focused on their own ambitions, because ultimately what we're here for is someone else, the players. So we don't want people to just pursue things for their own benefits, because that takes away the focus from what we are here for, to run great tournaments, to make people happy, and ultimately to make Wizards of the Coast lots of money.
Right. Your judging kind of reminds me of, you've been talking a lot lately. I follow you on Facebook now and things like that. And you've been talking about the fact that you're training for a marathon. And it's interesting how some of the things you say in your posts about running could also apply to your judging. Would you agree with that, that there's parallels there?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I finished the marathon. That was... week and a half ago now,
okay.
two weekends ago. And yeah, the parallels, I mean, I in my recent article on Star City talking about this, I quoted the, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. Mm-hmm. And judging is very much so that, especially, you know, if you want to be a level 3, you know, level 4 and 5, like I said, you don't personally aspire or decide when you're going to get those promotions. Mm-hmm. Level 3 is the kind of pinnacle of that, where you personally can decide, I want to be level 3, and put in the work for that, and work your way towards that promotion. And it is an absolute marathon, and people lose sight of that all the time. So I think the mentality, you really have to take the mentality that this is going to be something for the long haul, and you have to commit to it wholeheartedly, or else you're just going to fail.
Mm-hmm. I also like how you applied some of the things you learned from training for the marathon to just players in general. I think you wrote an article this week, I think it was, where you're talking about, like, just even the way people eat, where you see people go to events and they're living off of 5-hour energies and, you know, Kit Kats, and they're just, you know, they're not getting up to stretch. They're not living well while they're playing. And I think that's something that really needed to be said, was I feel like that's something that keeps some people from the tournament scene, or it does have long-term effects. And I was very happy that you covered that.
Yeah, it's something that I've been thinking about a lot, and it was a very difficult article to write.
Why is that?
Well, because there's this, I don't know how to put this. There's a sense when you talk about things like this, about fitness and weight loss, you know, there are certain negative connotations of, I believe it's called, you know, like body shame.
Mm-hmm.
Or things like that, where, and someone did comment on this, that on the article comments, that he felt that I was being condescending in my article, because, hey, you know, I was able to run a marathon and lose all this weight, why can't you, right? That's kind of where that comes out. And it's unfortunate that he felt that way. That's really not the perspective that I have on this. I do feel that people could be doing more, but it's not something that you can force on other people.
Right.
People really have to decide for themselves that they want to be healthier, that they want to exercise more, that they want to eat better. My real goal in this was to inspire people to do that and to start a dialogue on it as a community, because we're reaching this point where many of the first generation Magic players, like I feel that I am, I started playing in high school when the game first came out. So I have really seen the whole history of the game. And most people, well, not most, but a lot of people my age now have kids that are starting to play Magic. So we're reaching the second generation of Magic players. And it really scares me to think of these kids growing up, playing tournaments, grinding PTQ, grinding Star City Opens, grinding Grand Prix with this unhealthy community.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's also incredibly difficult when the only options to eat are not the best. Like, I remember, I don't know if you go to Gen Con at all, but,
convention
you know,
centers are terrible.
Exactly. Like, you know, I was actually on a, I remember right before that I was trying to eat better and I had cut out all fried foods with the exception of like a bag of chips. Like, let's say if I went to Subway, I'd get a bag of chips, you know, but that it'd be the
it's
small little
chips.
Bag. No, I would get the regular one. I'm eating better. I'm not dead. Yeah, that was, so I would get the small little bag of Lay's, the plain Lay's or whatever, and no soda. I was being good. And I remember going to the convention center and all that just went out the window. You were paying like $3 for a bottle of water, no bubblers in sight. Everything was just dripping in salt and goo, which normally I love. And I remember having to tell myself like, okay, so for the 4 days I'm at Gen Con, we're just not going to follow that because it was so hard. Hard to do. And it's really hard when everywhere you go, and I've been to opens in different cities. Like I went to SCG Philadelphia this year. I went to SCG Seattle this year. And no matter where I was, if the convention center itself didn't have bad food, that everywhere around you there were no options. It was Dunkin' Donuts, it was Qdoba, it was just constant, you couldn't get away from it. And I can kind of understand why there is that attitude of what am I supposed to do? Like, like what other options do I have?
So by far the best / worst is Memphis, Tennessee.
What?
The convention center there, their concession stand has barbecue nachos. You get tortilla chips. Just slathered in barbecue sauce and the pork meat. It was delicious, and I never want to eat it again now. But yeah, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things you have to do is you have to fight the small edges when you go to an event. And what I mean by that is one of the biggest changes I've made in order to be able to eat healthier while being on the road is to just cut out all of the sauces. Anything with a sauce, whether it's like chipotle mayonnaise or ketchup, these are incredibly doused with sugars. Mm-hmm. And even salads, surprisingly, the dressing, if you get a ranch dressing, you're just, like taking two steps forward and two steps back with that by getting a salad.
It's funny that you mentioned salads because there's a book that I bought a couple years ago called Skinny Chicks Don't Eat Salads. And it was the same theory that, a lot of these people, mostly women, because women, I hate to say it, but women do have the attitude of I'm just going to eat nothing but salad and everything will be fine. And the woman was basically saying in the book that when you put everything on a salad, it's almost worse for you than a burger, where if you go to Applebee's and you're getting the salads. Right, and the salads are so big, and then it's, we're going to put some chicken strips on here. We're going to put some cheese on here. We're going to put some this on there. And she's like, you might as well just gotten a goddamn burger. Like, you didn't do yourself any favors.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, it's not like a hamburger, the meat, that's not really inherently that bad for you. But when you add everything up, the cheese and the sauces especially, really just add up a lot of calories for not much food.
Yeah.
They're just there for flavor.
Yeah. So one of the things I've been dying to ask you about, Ricky, and I asked this of Ruben when I had him on the show, is sort
Ruben Bressler.
I did have Ruben on the show. He was a gem. We had a really good time.
Yeah, he's a stand-up comedian, so I can imagine
Well, we had a really good time, but one of the things I wanted to ask him about is I know as a commentator that the commentating gets a lot of criticism, gets a lot of feedback, and one of the things I wanted to ask him about was him being a commentator. You know, obviously he hears the criticism, and then I was curious how much of that is true. I feel like the same is true for judging, where everybody has something to say about the experience they've had with judges, and I'm sure that you're privy to a lot of this feedback, either on Twitter or just some eavesdropping or things like that. How much of what you hear people say about judges is true? Like, are they right about some of the criticisms that you hear, or are they, do you think it might be just sort of exaggerated?
Well, what do you mean by that? Because are they right about it? If they have a specific criticism, like this judge gave me a bad ruling, unless.
Well, what are some things people have told you? Like, has anyone come to you and said, Ricky, I've had this experience, and is it something
Oh.
that's true, or do you think they're just sort of blowing off steam?
Well, since, I am a known figure in the community as a judge, any tournament I'm at, people will inevitably come to me that this judge did this type story. And if you do have an experience, a negative or positive experience, I'm going to say, with a judge, just get their name. Many judges have the magnet name badges.
Oh, I know.
Make sure to write that down, because it's very important for us, the leaders of the program or a leader at a tournament, to be able to know who the judges are who are doing a bad job or a good judge. And then we can talk to them about it. Say, hey, a player came to me with this complaint and said that you got this ruling wrong. Do you remember this? Do you want to talk about it? Because that, for me, that's what I need. I understand that players have negative experiences with judges, but what I want to do is use those negative experiences to educate the judges on how we can not have these in the future. So that's what I would say to players is the most important thing is if you have an experience with a judge, get their name and then we can kind of work from there.
Are there pieces of criticism that you feel you hear more often than not, like repeatedly?
Well, I wrote an article a few weeks ago about don't be that judge. And the one thing by far, the big one is the judge who does not let the player go to the bathroom.
I
This
didn't
was
even know we could do that. It wasn't that anybody had stopped me necessarily. I just didn't think it was possible. Like, I didn't know.
Well, as I said in the article, man's gotta pee or woman's gotta pee. So I'm not gonna stand in the way of that. I'm not going to physically restrain you from going to the bathroom. Otherwise, you may accidentally urinate on me.
That would not be okay.
That wouldn't be pleasant. That would not be pleasant for anybody involved.
But yeah, that was another eye-opening article for me as a player. Like, I didn't know that was possible. Like, I can't tell you how many games where I've just sort of tapped my foot nervously, like, come on, kill me, I really need to go. And then finally they do, and you're like, yes! And, you don't even sign your slip right away. You just sort of dash to the bathroom, and then you're like, okay, now that that's over, I will sign that match slip, and it was nice playing you, sir. Thank you. And you can sort of get back to life, and I've been there. So what are some things that you would change about the program if you could, being on the inside? What are some things you think the program could stand to work on?
Oh, well, so as a judge, my big thing is feedback and reviews. There's a system on the Judge Center. It's judge.wizards.com. This is also where you can go to take judge exams, like the Rules Advisor exam and things like that. But there's also a system there for writing reviews of judges and giving them feedback on their performance. And this is something over the years that I have really invested a lot of energy in doing, both myself, writing a lot of reviews of other judges that I work with, and encouraging judges to do so and give each other feedback. Because, like I said, if something happens that a judge does wrong, the first thing we need to do is tell them that they got it wrong. Otherwise, they may continue to do it over and over again. So I feel like this is a big part of judge education is the ability to give people feedback and correct mistakes or, positive things as well. If someone's doing something very good, very positive for a tournament, and no one tells them that, it could maybe be very disheartening for that person. Like, oh, I did this and no one noticed, and no one told me if this was good or not. Mm-hmm. Right. So we want to encourage the good behavior, discourage the bad behavior, and reviews and feedback are the biggest thing for me. And that is, sometimes I feel like I'm a dying breed in that regard. It has really, the program as a whole has de-emphasized it lately because there has been this push toward acquisition. I think the number is now over 4,500 judges in the world, and that is literally double of what it was a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And when you have that many judges, I'm not saying it's a bad thing that we had this push to acquisition. With the growth of Magic in general, we needed more judges.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Everywhere. Magic has just exploded, you know, pre-releases, getting 100, 200 players, FNMs, over 100 players. We need judges everywhere. So it was a good thing that we went through this push for acquisition, but I feel like now it's time to consolidate those gains and really focus on education, feedback, and making the judges that are in the system better. Mm-hmm. And helping them to be better judges, because, you know, I hate to say this, but I think because of the push for acquisition, the kind of, you know, how do you rate this? But the average skill level of a judge at a tournament is lower than it has been in the past.
Right. So what is something, I know you've mentioned earlier in the show that you do have the influence to make change. You know, you talked about Montana and things like that. Is there anything that you personally, Ricky, can do to make this better? Like, have you thought about that? Is that possible?
I have thought about it. I mean, right now I just go out and do what I can. I write reviews, mm-hmm. and I try to write very thorough reviews and talk to people about writing reviews and help them get better at it, identify people who are good at it. And right now I'm really just biding my time, as it were, marshaling my resources and waiting for, hopefully, the program, the higher level judges to decide, yeah, you know what, we need to do something about this. We need to re-emphasize reviews and feedback. And then I will be ready. It'll be, well, now I was going to make an analogy to a movie. Think of it. I guess it would be like the Riders of Rohan.
Okay.
You know? And the judge program as a whole is at Helm's Deep. And I'm waiting for Gandalf to come to me and say, please come help us at Helm's Deep.
Okay.
And I will come riding in.
Is there anything that you can suggest that the judges themselves can do? You know, like, you know, they can do things to make themselves better where it doesn't necessarily fall on your shoulders to institute those changes. So if there is a judge listening that wants to bring about that change, and, you know, they always say, be the change you want to see, I think the phrase goes, what would you suggest they do?
Oh, boy. I mean, that's a hard one. There are so many resources nowadays. So, I mean, you have to honestly sit down and assess yourself, mm-hmm. and figure out what it is you're good at and what it is you're not good at. And if you have trouble self-assessing, then talk to some people. Talk to your mentors. If you go to a larger tournament, talk to a level 3 and get them to assess you and help you identify what you're weak at, and then seek out the resources that might be able to make you better at that. There are lots of resources out there, but it can be a maze. You know, there are so many different websites.
Oh, yeah.
So once you do figure out what it is you need to work on, you may, again, need to talk to people, you know, like your regional coordinator, who have seen all the resources, because I've been around so long, I know what all the websites are. I've read most of the articles. So if someone comes to me and says, Ricky, I'm really weak at customer service, or I'm really weak at rules, I can point them to certain articles, or I can point them to individuals maybe who can help mentor them, whether in person or online. Mm-hmm. So that's another area where the regional coordinator system, we can really help people, but you have to communicate with us, because there's so many, you know, in each region in the U.S., I think there's over 200 judges. So I can't personally spend the time figuring out what everyone needs. You really have to come and tell me what you need or want, and then we can figure it out.
Right. That's a good way to look at it. So one of the most important judges in your universe is your fiance. She's also a level 3 judge. You've mentioned her throughout the show. Tell me how you two met. Did you meet through the program?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Tasha Jameson, we are currently engaged. Mm-hmm. We are looking at wedding venues right now.
Very nice.
We met, this is 2009.
Wow.
At a Grand Prix Minneapolis. She's originally from Minnesota. She's from Duluth, Minnesota.
Okay.
And this was her first Grand Prix. She was there. Uncertified, level 0. She came from Duluth, which is about a 3-hour drive away from Minneapolis, because the store and the town did not have a judge. Mm. And she felt this responsibility. She was a TO helping the store out, and she felt this responsibility to become a judge, to further the growth of the store and further the growth of the player base. Mm-hmm. In her town. So she came to the GP and we met very briefly in passing on Saturday, and I didn't notice at the time, but she knew who I was from my articles on the internet, and she claims that she was a bit starstruck. And on Sunday, myself and Ryan Stapleton participated in certifying her for level 1. Now, so Ryan was technically the one who tested her, and I was just the kind of testing overseer. Mm-hmm. Over the whole event. So I helped get several other people tested. So sometimes I will say that I tested her for level 1. That's not technically true. I participated in the process.
Sure.
And that, like, at the time, that was it. It was like, okay, you're level 1, you know, go do great things in Duluth. And I actually got on a plane the next day and flew off to Rome for Worlds that year.
Wow.
And didn't really think much of it after that because, hey, I'm in Rome. Fantastic. But a few months later, I guess it was like 4 or 5 months later, Chris Richter, who at the time was a level 3 and the regional coordinator for the Midwest, which Minnesota was a part of, you know, various definitions of Midwest, right? He came on, what did he do? He was on the level 3 mailing list, which we had at the time, and posted a response from a local judge of his on why do you want to be a level 2? Why should you be promoted to a level 2 judge? And he was like, you guys should read this response. It's a fantastic reply. This is everything we're looking for in people to promote for level 2. And he had actually set a trap because someone replied on the mailing list and said something along the lines of, well, it looks like he really has a good head on his shoulders. And then Chris Richter replies like, haha, gotcha, it's a woman. And I, like, at that point, I knew. I had had these interactions with Tasha, and I personally also felt that she would make a fantastic level 2 judge immediately. Like, even when she tested, she was just so smart, so knowledgeable, and yeah, had a good head on her shoulders. So when he made this post and they had this exchange and, oh, it's actually a woman, I was like, oh, it's Tasha. She's testing for level 2 soon. And we were Facebook friends, I think, just because after an event, that's what you do. You Facebook friend all of the other judges.
Now, see, when I do that, they don't like it.
Oh.
But I'm not a judge.
Yeah. I have Facebook friends, players who want to as well.
Well, I only add the cute ones, or I try to, but...
Yes, that's true.
Well, it's not my fault. You're also fetching in those black shirts. I'm not made of wood.
Yeah, right? People want to get rid of those shirts. I'm like, but I look so good in mine.
Seriously. Like, there was there's a couple that have left lasting impressions where it's like, you can... I would take an infraction from them anytime. So, go on. Right. Go on.
So I believe I messaged her on Facebook just, to give her some advice. At the time, that's all it really was, hey, I seems like you're getting ready for level two. Like, is there anything I can help you with? And then, one of the resources I shared with her was the IRC channel. There's a channel on IRC, hashtag MTGJudge on the EFNet, where a lot of judges congregate. And so she came on IRC, and it was very obvious it was her because her screen name was Tasha, maybe with an underscore or a dash. And that just kind of continued the conversation. Like we chatted some more on IRC. It was very friendly and playful. And the big, I think we both agree that the big turning point was she was talking about being from Minnesota and mentioned the Vikings. This is in the main chat. And it's an international channel. So some people were just kind of like, what is that? American football. We don't understand. And I private messaged her because, as I said, I'm a Packers fan, and poked a little fun at the Vikings, and this led to some friendly banter. And it was friendly enough that I felt, oh, maybe I should try pursuing this,
Oh, wow.
which is pretty scary because, you met someone once, one time in real life, and barely had any interactions. And now you're talking to them on the internet. So one thing led to another, and we ended up, well, I don't even remember the specific time. I think we met at Grand Prix Columbus. We scheduled it so we would both go to Grand Prix Columbus. Her
Nice.
from Minnesota, me at this point from Virginia. I had moved to work for Star City Game. And we met. And we actually, the conversations online had been going well enough that we had made it Facebook official before that we were, because it's not official till it's Facebook
That's
official.
true.
But we didn't actually physically meet again until that event, like a month later. And everything went well, and here we are several years later.
Wow, that's amazing. What I'm really curious about is you're both level threes, so I would imagine that with all the traveling that you do, and especially with you doing the commentating and things like that, and all the responsibilities that you two have, how on earth do you guys make it work?
Oh boy, I don't know. Does it Yeah, I mean, it's kind of weird. It works partially because currently my capacity with Star City Games, I work from home because I do all my work remotely, and then I go to events on the weekend. So I'm home all the time on the weekdays when I'm not at events. So we do get to spend quite a bit of time together that way. And a lot of times we go to Grand Prix together, and even though we don't see each other all the time at the event, we still it's I think it works because we want it to work, because we make the most out of the time that we have together. And especially at events, we will usually, because we're both level threes, we'll usually be on different teams, because it's important to divide up your resources that way and allocate them correctly. But when we get back together at the end of the day, we usually go out with a couple of friends, have a quiet dinner. We're not really fans of a big 20-person rah-rah dinners. So we
Right.
go out with a couple of close friends and then get to spend our quiet evening out.
Is there ever any sort of playful competition between you two amongst who might be the better judge, and maybe you guys disagree on things? Has that ever come up before?
We disagree all the time, and I'm usually right because I am much more experienced. She's giving me that face now.
I have to be honest though, Ricky, when I did say that I was having you on my show, one of my very good friends, who will remain nameless, did say that your fiance is totally the better judge. Just putting that
Now, who is that? You may. I'm gonna need to give that name up later. Doesn't have to be on the air. I'm gonna need that information so I can send my ninja hit squad.
Silver Fox Squad. But no, I always think that's really interesting. Like, I remember I had Kim Warren on my show, and her partner is a judge as well. And I find it interesting, the dynamic between two judges that are, you know, partnered together. And I would think that'd be really neat to see. Like, I think that's something you wouldn't see every day. And I'm always curious how that plays out.
We don't really compete. She did, you know, there was a point where I had judged the Star City Open in Baltimore, and then she did one in St. Louis the week after, and she made a really big deal about the fact that her event went faster than mine. And I kind of shrugged it off because I don't care that much.
Which, of course, means you totally care.
No, actually, that's not true at all.
Really? Okay.
Well, my perspective on it is that an event, the speed of an event, and a lot of judges focus on this thing called round turnover, mm-hmm. which is how long each round takes to turn over, because they feel like this is something that they have this grand influence of it. It means that they're a better judge if their round goes faster. I don't believe that.
Okay.
I think a lot of it is just dumb luck, mm-hmm. you know, whether a round finishes fast. It's whether that eggs in modern or high tide player, you know, goes off on turn five of, you know, the extra turns. Because if that happens, you're going to be there for another 20 minutes, right? So there are ways we can influence the speed of a tournament, but ultimately I think it's just luck. And for me personally, I try to focus more on the emotions of the tournament, meaning if I'm the head judge, I absolutely want to make people laugh during my announcements, the players, and I want to have interactions with people that make them enjoy magic. And then I feel personally that if they do, they're not going to care if a round took 60 minutes or 62 minutes. It doesn't matter because they're having fun.
That's ultimately what it's all about.
Yeah.
So, Ricky, if anybody's enjoyed listening to you on the show and they want to follow you a bit more or just get in touch with you, how can they do that?
I think the best, I don't want to give up my email.
That's fine.
No, I'm just going to say follow me on Twitter at MTGRickipedia. Mm-hmm. It's RIKIPEDIA, so it's like the website but with an R, at MTGRickipedia. And if you wish to get a hold of me through there, you know, you can tweet at me and say, hey, can we get exchange information, and then we can do that privately. Mm-hmm. I guess you can message me on Facebook. It should be I can't believe that there are any other Ricky Hayashi. It's that arrogant, but maybe there are. But most likely, if you are a Magic player and you search for Ricky Hayashi on Facebook, you will see that we have mutual friends, mm-hmm. because yeah, Magic the Gathering.
And you have your column on Star City Games.
Yeah, you can certainly leave a comment on the article. No, that's not a good idea, because after a certain point, I don't leave the comments. You know, after a week. If you're commenting on articles from 3 weeks ago, no one will notice. Just the facts.
Yeah, I tend to only follow my comments, like what happens is I initially publish my episodes to the Legit MTG blog, and there's a comment section there, and I usually only keep an eye on those for like the first 2 or 3 days, and then I sort of give up after that, because I'll be honest, I don't get too many comments, which I'm okay with, but yeah, I tend to not watch them for too long either, and then it's surprising to me when I'll go back and see message alerts saying, you know, you've got a new comment, and I'm like, that was from ages ago, and then I feel like a jerk because it sat there for so long and I didn't reply to it, and I don't want them thinking, oh, that Erin Campbell's too good to reply to her comments. And it's not that I am, I just didn't know. So I relate to that. So, well, Ricky,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was just going to say, well, Ricky Hashi, it has been a pleasure having you on the show, and I'm really grateful that you took time out of your day to join me on here. And I know a lot of people are looking forward to this show, and I think they're going to hear a nice side of you. So I'm glad you did this with me. Thank you.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
Yeah.
We didn't get to talk about any decks, though. This is deck tea, right? Can we talk about the deck, or?
Well, I didn't really want to talk about decks with you. Like, I think that's kind of how I got the name, the deck tease, I guess you could say, is because we really don't talk about
okay.
decks here.
I finally got it. Oh, my goodness.
Well, that's one of the reasons. And then the actual reason, the real reason I got the name of the show was because I can never seem to settle on a deck where, you know, I'll be playing a deck for a while and then another deck will come along. Like I'll read an article and I'll be like, oh, that deck looks really fun. And oh, wait, that deck looks like even more fun. And then people are like, stick with what you have. Like, don't play those other decks. You've got a good thing here. I tend to have a wandering eye when it comes to decks. Or I'm also the kind of person that feels like I can do something with every card. So I'll find a card. Like I'll go through a spoiler set or I'll go through Gatherer and I'll be like, I should totally build a deck around that. That's what I'm going to do. I'm gonna make this deck. And then as
a... one copy into your current deck?
Well, it's only that, you know, but then I'll get started building that deck. And then again, another card will come along and I'm like, I should totally make a deck around their card. And then people will be like, you didn't even finish the deck around the last card. I'm like, I know, but this is better. You guys, trust me. And then, you know, I'll put down that deck and then I'll start another deck. And I'm really bad at that. Like I need to just ride a deck until the wheels fall off.
Well, you would have loved Gifts Ungiven. Because you could just put one of everything in that deck.
That probably would have been for me.
Eventually find it or gifts for it. No, it was a terrible deck. I played it in a Grand Prix and took 3 unintentional draws because it was so slow.
Aww. Well, thanks again for coming on the show. And if anyone else is listening and you've enjoyed hearing what you've heard on the Deck Tees, you can always find me first and foremost on legitmtg.com. Then you can find the show on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Feel free to subscribe, leave me a review, some stars or a thumbs up. I really do appreciate it and it really does help. If you want to follow the show, you can follow the show on Twitter at the Deck Tees. You can follow me on Twitter at Original Estrus. That's OriginalOestrus. And if you have any personal feedback for me, you can always email me directly at estrus@elitistjerks.com. Thank you guys so much for listening, and please take care of yourselves, okay? Bye.